Alain Béranger. I'm the chair-elect of the not-for-profit operational concern constituency at ICANN. We are in Prague for the workshop on using technology to raise funds. What I propose to do is to introduce the two speakers, and at the end of the two presentations, we will go into a question and answer period, and we will give priority to the remote participants, if you allow me. And I will close the session with giving a constituency activity report of our work since the last ICANN meeting. So thank you for taking this agenda. Let me introduce to you Angie Graves. And Angie is a member of the business constituency at ICANN and on the working group on the Standing Committee on Improvements. And she's also a member of the Internet Society. She's currently employed in the Proven Method, an IT staffing and consulting firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. She is also the founder of Web Group Incorporated, and she has been an early IT adopter and was a very early network architect for AT&T and IBM. Angie, thank you very much, and the room is yours.
Thank you, Alain. Very glad to be here this morning. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone present in the room and online. I want to talk today about using technology to raise funds. And thank you for that, Kieran. I'll have to coordinate. I'll do a raise hand. Yes. I want to talk about some considerations and some things that are useful in considering raising funds online. There are a lot of things that are useful to know, and if you're watching along on Adobe Connect on the slideshow, you'll see this is the high-level outline of the points that I'd like to cover today. One of them is about knowing your donors and understanding who they are and having a profile of a potential donor, your potential donor. Next is their method and technology. What tools are available at their disposal? What kind of avenues do they have to use in order to submit donations? And then in assessing their profile and determining who they are, knowing what the target donation amount is helpful as well, and I'll go into that a little bit more later as well. And then understanding their geography, which is actually a segue into my colleague Kieran's speech as well, because we are going to be talking about borders and international concerns. So we'll move on to the next slide. What is it that motivates your donors to donate? So understanding who your donors are is the first step in figuring out what their motivations are. Consider that you're proposing a transaction. Just like in the for-profit world, there's an exchange of money for goods. In the non-profit world, there's an exchange of money for something that the donor wants. It could be a good feeling. It could be for financial needs of their own. And it could also have considerations that are with respect to the use of their funds, statistical information, understanding the quality of the organization and how much of the donor's dollars are actually going to go to the cause. So, in assessing that and figuring out what their needs are, I think of Andrew Carnegie's words, that you can get anything in life that you want if you help other people get what they want. And it really does make sense in this realm, because you need donations, you need money to support your cause. The donor needs to feel motivated, either by financial reasons or understanding of the quality of your charity, or good feeling, etc. So I wanted to make sure that you understand the motivation, because that is the key to get them to pick up the phone or click or take that action that results in a donation to your charity. We'll move on to the next slide. Yeah. So understanding what their gateway, what their avenue is to donate. People used to donate through the mail. People used to donate telephones with their telephone, and people still do use the telephone, but they also use mobile phones. And we also have the World Wide Web for donations as well. Now, we'll get into geography shortly, but not everybody has the web. Not everybody necessarily even has landlines. So this goes back to understanding your donor and having a profile of your donor and understanding what your donor's capabilities are to make that donation that you want them to make. So these are all considerations, and the avenue is certainly an important one. I'll speak a little bit about the web and how people are using the web to receive donations. A lot of nonprofits are working on creating their own websites and interfaces for donations. Others are outsourcing. And a little bit later in this presentation, I have a couple of examples of organizations that will help your nonprofit provide gateways for donations without you needing to understand the technology yourself. I have an interesting example of a mobile phone donation method. I spoke with someone recently who talked about in African countries, there was one in particular, that accepted phone card airtime through mobile phone messages as donations of airtime, which were an asset that can be cashed in for money. Yes. So being creative, understanding those avenues and opportunities is very helpful, because you want to make it easy for your donors to donate. You don't want to make it difficult for them. So the more wide open the door to them, and understanding what technologies and avenues are available to them is key. If we can move to the next slide, I appreciate that. The last thing I want to touch on before we go to examples is geography. And I think that should be a segue to you. So maybe I've misplaced this slide. But geographic considerations are important, because we've got national borders and we've got donors potentially from other countries. So one of the easiest ways to accept donations online is through PayPal. Some donors do want receipts for their donations, and PayPal doesn't necessarily give you any tax breaks, and I'm not here to talk about taxes, but it does offer them a receipt for the donation that they made. So that's a useful thing to consider too. And using PayPal and setting up to receive donations on PayPal is very simple and can be learned in just a few minutes. You don't want to do that if your donors don't have access to PayPal, though, because it would be useless to have a PayPal interface. the more awareness that you have towards your organization is a marketing consideration, and the more awareness there is, then the larger body of potential donors you have. If we move over to the next slide, I've got some examples. This organization is called the International, that's the next slide. This slide is Charity Navigator. And Charity Navigator is one of a couple of sources that does evaluations of charities. So for those who are interested in statistics and understanding how many pennies for each dollar actually go to the effort that your nonprofit represents, this would be of interest to them. It's like the, we say in America, the good housekeeping seal of approval. They do evaluations of nonprofit programs. They gain an understanding of the amount of dollars that actually go to fund directly the recipients who are to benefit from your nonprofit. And they provide a grade. So those who are interested in statistics would go somewhere like Charity Navigator, and it's certainly of use to be registered with them so that you can receive a grade, and that would encourage more visibility, more awareness, and maybe more donors. And if you look at this screenshot, and it is charitynavigator.org, by the way, if you look on the right side of the screenshot, you'll see that they are accepting donations. And they make it very simple for their donors to donate because they have target amounts. They have 10, 20, 50, and enter your own amount. This is useful in making it easy for your donors to donate. So this is just an example. The next slide, please, if you would. This organization is called Network for Good. And I'm offering this up as a technology partner for any nonprofit that doesn't know or want to know the technology behind creating a web interface and who would like assistance and outsourcing opportunity. So this is a platform. It's a giving platform. In fact, they say it there, the leading giving platform for powering your cause. So they're the technology back end. You don't have to have any computers or servers of your own. You can call them and work with them, and they will provide the technology that you need for a web interface. If we'll move on to the next slide, please. This organization is also helpful to nonprofits, and it's called the International, I want to make sure I get their name exactly right. It's the International Society for Third Sector Research. And what they do is they help the management of nonprofits. And they understand what the current problems are of nonprofit managers. So providing help with training, providing links to resources is what this organization does. And with that, Kieran, I'd like to go back to geography and see if you can help us out a little bit with those considerations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Angie. And we will take questions after the second presentation. Let me introduce you to the next speaker. Ms. Malancha Rouville is an attorney specializing in intellectual property law with emphasis in domestic and international trademark counseling and protection, as well as intellectual property protection on the Internet. She is a member of the International Trademark Association, a member of the Saul Lefkowitz Moot Court Planning Team, and a member of the Trademark Legislation Committee of the American Bar Association. Miss Malan Charouville graduated from California State University, San Bernardino, in 2007, and received her JD from the American University Washington College of Law in 2011. She has extensive experience in marketing and international brand development and holds a graduate degree in marketing from the Oxford Business College. She studied European trademark law at ESAD University in Barcelona, a leading Spanish business school, in 2010. I give you Kiran Malachan-Rouville.
Thank you, Alon, and may I say I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you very much for your invitation and for the opportunity to work with the NPOC in this regard. Today I'd like to talk a little bit about online fundraising and the legal requirements under United States law. Now, I am a United States attorney, but I feel that this information is extremely helpful for those of our constituents who are outside of the United States but look to solicit charitable donations inside the United States. The United States is well-known charitable giving geographical area and are always looking to international places to funnel their charitable donations. So it's important for all of our constituents around the world to understand when they can direct charitable fundraising to the United States and what requirements may be present for them when they do that. So hopefully this presentation can help a bit with that. Charitable giving in the United States in 2011 was $298.4 billion. So that's B as in boy, that's a lot of money. So the problem with fundraising online and fundraising in general is that there is, when there's a huge amount that's given, there's a huge potential for misuse and solicitation using fraudulent means. So in 2011, the Federal Trade Commission determined that 1%, which equal to $2.8 billion, was misused or solicited using fraudulent means. So a lot of times we ask when there are laws that impose somewhat of a bother to us as charitable organizations or as even commercial organizations, we often wonder why we have to do that. So in law school, they taught us, understand the harms before you understand the law, and then you won't be so grumpy about it. So I offer you this $2.98 billion figure as a means to understand that that money would have been spent better with organizations that actually directed funds towards those in need and those whom the person intended them to go to. So as we talk about the requirements that the law imposes in the United States, please keep in mind that $2.98 billion was lost because of what didn't happen. So the first question that you need to ask is whether or not the laws in the United States will apply to you. The first and most obvious question is, do you do business in the United States? Obviously, if you do business in the United States, you're going to be registered as a business entity, as a nonprofit organization. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the registration requirements and the legal challenges that I'm going to discuss apply to you. You want to ask yourself another couple of questions. For example, do you have more than $25,000 in revenues per year? Or do you file an IRS 990 or a 990EZ form? Those are easy questions that you can ask within your organization, and if you don't know what those forms are, which I do not, for example, then you probably don't have to worry about that. The next question you have to ask, which is probably more pertinent to our constituency members overseas, is do you solicit donations in the United States? And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what that means, because there are many ways in which the law has kind of parsed out what it means to solicit a donation and what it would mean to be subject to the laws of the United States as a result of that activity. But you should also be aware, and I know that some of our constituency members fall within these exemptions, is that there are exemptions. They are state-specific. So when Angie talks about borders and when she talks about challenges in geography, one of the very important things to understand is that the United States is split, obviously, into 50 states, and each state has its own laws and has its own set of requirements. There are some uniform standards that are applied, but generally the rule is always understand what state you're working in and what they do. So none of these statements are meant to apply broadly throughout all of the 50 geographical United States. So some religious organizations will be exempt. Some educational organizations will be exempt, and some political organizations will be exempt. And if you want to know which, you have to go to the state-specific law. And it's really, there are many, many resources available, which I'll talk about later, to help you find out that information. One of the resources is the National Association of State Charity Officials, which I believe goes by the acronym NASCO, and we're no stranger to acronyms here at ICANN. So NASCO created a set of principles called the Charleston Principles, guidelines on charitable solicitations using the internet. These principles are by no means hard and fast, but what they're designed to do is to help nonprofits understand when a state may reasonably require registration, when they would reasonably require information from a not-for-profit to understand the purpose of their activities and to determine whether or not their solicitation attempts are legitimate. The principles also help charitable organizations understand and adjust their activities as they're directed towards the United States or within the United States and plan for the consequences of their activities. For example, the Charleston Principles being out there basically eliminates the possibility of a not-for-profit saying, well, I didn't know, and then avoiding the consequences on the basis of lack of knowledge about these things. So we're very grateful that it's all in one source. The Charleston Principles focuses on two ways in which you can solicit charitable donations through the internet, and they put them into two broad categories. The first category is an interactive website, which is any website that permits a contributor to make a contribution or purchase a product in connection with a charitable solicitation. So basically, if you have a PayPal interface, like Angie talked about, if you had an interface like the examples in which she gave, while very easy and very accessible to donors, would qualify you to be an interactive website. And that is a very easy and fabulous way to solicit donations. It makes it so simple for those of us who are on a website and are inspired by a mission of a nonprofit. The other kind of website is a passive website, which is informational only, without any way to submit a contribution through the website or any solicitation to contribute offline. And passive websites, engaging in a passive website, poses many, many requirements about what you can do in connection to that website if you seek to avoid registration by putting up a passive website, which I'll talk about a little later. So what triggers registration? First of all, and this is where I get into sort of fun legal terms, so I apologize for that. I do my best to put it in normal person speak. Domicile is, it just simply asks the question whether your principal place of business is in the United States. Regardless of whether your website is interactive or passive, regardless of what your activities are, if your principal place of business is in the United States and you're soliciting donations online, registration is required, period. So that one's pretty easy, actually. The second one isn't as easy, and this is one of my most favorite legal terms. It's called purposeful availment. And basically what purposeful availment means is if you're going to get the benefits, you better pay the cost. So what purposeful availment says is that if you are soliciting donations in a state, or if you're directing any kind of solicitation or any kind of activity to a state, then what you've basically done is told the state that you're receiving the benefits from their people, and you will hold yourself accountable according to the state's laws. And if a state law requires registration, then you will register as a result of purposeful availment. So The Charleston principles in specifically say that you will have to register on a theory of purposeful availment if your non-internet activities alone would be sufficient for registration. So, for example, if you're soliciting in the state not through the internet, through direct mail or through a place of business, even if it's not the principal place of business or your domicile, if your non-internet activities would be sufficient for registration, then your internet activities will be sufficient for registration as well. The other and infinitely more complicated part of purposeful availment is that if the entity solicits contributions through an interactive website and one of the following, then you will be subject for registration. And the following is as follows. You specifically target persons physically located in the state. So you're directing yourself to the people that live in the state. And the Charleston principles talk about give a little bit of an illustration with this by saying you either have an expressed or implied reference to solicitation in that state, or you otherwise affirmatively appeal to residents in that state, such as advertisements or sending messages, sending emails to persons located in the state, when you know, or you should probably know, that the recipient is located in that state. The next is if you receive contributions from the state on a repeated and ongoing basis. And the Charleston principles define this further. And they unfortunately say that it's state specific. So a state will give a number, usually a number of communications, a dollar amount, a number of transactions that are related to whether or not a state considers solicitation repeated or ongoing. And again, if you solicit contributions through a passive site, but you encourage offline activity or you send communication that promotes the website, and you encourage somebody to put something in the mail and you give them an address and you do anything that really kind of encourages them to contribute offline, then that constitutes purposeful availment as well, and you will be required to register. So you're basically required to register. What do you do next? The first thing that you should probably consult is the Unified Registration Statement. 38 states have gotten together and provided a very simple and straightforward questionnaire with registration fees and a request for supporting documents, and those states accept that Unified Registration Statement. But of course, beware, because each state will require different forms of documentation, and they will also require different fees. So even though it is unified, it is, of course, more complicated than that. And my favorite part about the Unified Registration Statement is that the acronym is URS, which is a well-known and highly controversial acronym here at the ICANN meeting in Prague. The next thing that you'll have to do is pay a registration fee, and most states will require an annual renewal, which will also impose a registration fee. The registration fee is usually nominal, and the exceptions to registration in a state generally focus on those not-for-profit organizations that would have a hard time coming up with a registration fee. So you should in no way be put off by the words fee on the presentation or the words fee in the Uniform Registration Statement. It is not expensive, and if it is too expensive, the state will normally have something in place to allow the nonprofits to register without worry. The consequences of non-registration, in case you're tempted to just throw this all out the window and say it's too complicated, which is, you know, a natural reaction, I think, to the law, are fines, felony charges, tax consequences, and ultimate exclusion from soliciting in the United States as a whole in the future. So the consequences far outstrip any kind of burden that you might face for registration in the first place. So that's pretty much all I have on that. It's a very brief overview of what you need to do. My presentation is only designed to help you start thinking about what you need to do to solicit funds in the United States. And if you have any questions or other, or you require any more detailed analysis or more resources, you can always contact me through the MPOC voice list. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kieran, for this interesting presentation. I'm always biased towards legal presentation, but and in fact they put me to sleep in general. So this is a good feedback. On a more serious base, I think we have some questions from the remote questions.
Yes, Alain. This is Rob Hogarth monitoring the remote chat. Klaus Stoll has a comment. He says, this presentation is important for the social sector. How can we disseminate it widely? Can we put it up at the GKPFWW site?
Which presentation?
I think he means the collected presentation, but I'll let you clarify that, Klaus, on the chat.
Well, thank you very much, Klaus, for that that question. If we have the permission of the authors to disseminate their presentation, then yes, I would encourage the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation to load it up. And I would also, of course, we will also load it up in the NPOC website. Well, thank you to our speakers. We'll now move to the room participants. And does anyone here have a question for our speakers? For the general information, we have participants from the Gambia and that I know of, and Botswana. U.S. What's your country?
U.S.
So we have Africa and U.S. concentration in this room. So if there's no question, I will move to the reporting part of the NPOC session. This is not an obligation, but we at NPOC like to. I've started a bit of a tradition to do that. So I will give you a report of the activities of our constituency between March and June 2012. Of course, we are a very new constituency, and in fact, the founding chair is with us here in the room, and I'd like to acknowledge the huge contribution that Debbie Hughes from the American Red Cross has made in making NPOC a reality. So thank you very much, Debbie. Great. So shortly after San Jose, elections were held, and with the following results. Laurie Schulman from Schulman and Associates and from ACDS was elected vice chair. Amber Sterling, one of our previous interim chair, was kind enough to take up the role and was elected as secretary. Klaus Stoll, who was on at the Adobe Connect, was elected chair of the membership committee. Judy Branzell from Goodwill Industries was elected chair of the policy committee, and Eduardo Monge from San Jose and from the Omar Dengo Foundation was elected chair of the communication committee. Eduardo is also doing extra duty as the acting treasurer. We say acting because at the time he was nominated, we didn't have any money, so that wasn't a big problem. I want to turn to our membership numbers evolution over the last 3 months. And this is, in fact, the overall number, and I'm quite surprised because we, in fact, have registered pending or new applications or new expressions of applications up to 48. And some of these members are federation, like the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation, which has over 100 members. So we also we touch many more actors of civil society. The breakdown of our membership number is 25 approved. And by approved, we mean we're a very inclusive group, so it's not difficult to become a member of NPOC. You just have to be interested in internet and civil society, and show us proof that you're incorporated wherever you're from as a properly registered organization, a civil, a not-for-profit organization. We have 12 more of those 48. 12 members are have the application under review as purely administrative process. Three are under litigious conditions. Three more have come in the last week as new members, and and five organizations have approached me since I've been in Prague and are very seriously interested, and have already sent me email about becoming members. Some of them are in the room here, and what's great is that the people expressing new members are from Africa and from the Middle East and from Asia. I wanted to say in my report that we have developed a strategic partnership during this last 3 months with the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation. This is a 14-year-old global organization which has been very active during the information society decade, and was a participant in every possible forum on the use of ICTs for development and education and health. And this foundation was good enough to be one of our first donors and help with getting some of our NPOC members to the San Jose meeting. And in the first collaboration was with the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation was the fact that NPOC, still at the time without budget, was able to run an event at the World Summit on Information Society in at its Geneva meeting in 2012. And for those of you that are interested in the numbers, we can give you a report, but it was a very successful event. I'm particularly proud of, in the last 3 months, we've actually been able to arrange for editorial, authorship, and publication of a series of articles around the theme of NGOs and internet governance. And taking a moment about internal ICANN interest, some of the authors and editors are from other constituencies, including our sister constituency, NCUC, but also outside outside our constituent, our stakeholders group. So, in fact, NPOC has found it comfortable and easy to work across the constituencies. This is witnessed by our speakers who come from the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency. So watch for that publication, and and if you want more detail about the academic journal and the index and the authors, and even if it's still time for you to contribute an article if you wish. What NPOC has done in terms of outreach is done its first outreach to Africa. you recall that the mission of NPOC is to increase the level of participation of civil society in ICANN policy development and other processes. And we felt that Africa was probably the best place to start. And we worked in collaboration and with the support of Africa's manager for regional relations, Anne-Rachel Iné. And Anne-Rachel guided us through the complexities of this. And our first call for membership into NPOC was done a few days ago on using the Afrinic.net platform. And so thank you, Anne-Rachel. I haven't met you yet, but already I'm indebted to your work. Thank you. And a big thank you also to Eduardo, who has masterminded the production of the call in four languages. And, of course, we tried to pick the four languages that were relevant to Africa, at least in international relations, English, French, Portuguese, and Arabic. And I want to finally thank Amber for this, Amber Sterling, who had to keep up with all this development on the website that we currently have. We have, I'm pleased to say that on our own, mostly on our own budget, we have five NPOC members in Prague. I'm pleased also to report that we prepared the proposed program of NPOC for submission to ICANN for financial year 2013. And 2 days ago, this budget was approved. So the reality is that NPOC is now has the means to move forward and to do some real fundraising and some real programming, because we have the modest means, but still means to do it. So our focus and program over the next 12 months will be webinars. Excuse me, the focus for our program will essentially be outreach. So we plan a series of webinars, a recruitment effort, and a series of workshops, but all this in parallel to ICT conferences or IT conferences, because NPOC wouldn't have the drawing power on its own, but we can piggyback on the IGF and the WESIT and other platforms. In fact, we received an invitation this week from Cameroon to participate. Could NPOC participate in the workshop? And unfortunately, the invitation came a little too late. I want to tell you also that we were optimist, and that we promote and I think it's important for the civil society sector to be transparent about our finances. Finances is a big term, but anyway, we try to walk the talk, and on our website you will find a statement of revenues and expenses to 15th June 2012. It's very modest, but anybody can access that website and understand how every penny that we have received has been used. And finally, there was a very proud moment for young NPOC, in the sense that one of our members has just received the prestigious Asturias Prize. So, and I name the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society. So kudos to an NPOC member. They've already have received four Nobel Prize, but this Asturias Prize is a special significance for those of you that know the principality of the Asturias. This is a very, very prestigious honor. So, congratulations, Debbie, on behalf of your presence as a federation.
So I end my report here. We are a little bit ahead of time, but that's okay. I think we may be the first session that that did that here in Prague. So I would like, for the record, to take opportunity to have the participants in the room introduce themselves. And what I would ask is that you give your name, the country you are based in, and the institution that you represent. And I will start with Berin on my left, if she would be good enough to start this process. Thank you, Berin.
Thank you, Alan. My name is Berin Gillen. I'm representing the Information Technology Association of the Gambia. We currently have an application with the NPOC, and I think we're waiting for a response at the moment.
A very good morning. My name is Hao Musewu, and I am from Botswana, the Botswana IT Society.
My name is Andrew Mack, and I run a consulting firm in Washington, and we do a lot of work in the development space and have worked historically with lots of NGOs and nonprofits.
Hello, my name is Maria Dolores Puy. I'm from Argentina. I am a notary, so I work for the Notaries Association there, and I'm an ISOC member for the chapter in Argentina.
Good morning, Rob Hogarth, ICANN staff, Washington, D.C., United States.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. My name is Deborah Hughes, and I'm pleased to be at my first NPOC meeting, officially representing also the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. I'm taking on an exciting new role where I'll be helping the International Federation manage and troubleshoot internet related issues, so that's exciting and very new. I still obviously work for the American Red Cross, where I manage fundraising, internet-related issues, and other contract issues, protecting the American Red Cross as it executes its mission. So welcome to everyone, and I hope to see many, many more new members throughout the developing area. As many of you know, it's a passion of mine when I began this big quest to create this constituency, and actually participated on the outreach task force that unfortunately that work wasn't approved to create a more robust outreach program ICANN-wide. But I'm hopeful that those efforts will continue, if not at the ICANN-wide level, but certainly throughout NPOC, and just delighted to see the growth from very humble beginnings back in 2009. So welcome to all of you.
Thank you very much, Debbie. For those of you that walked in just a few minutes late, I just don't want you to miss the fact that Debbie Hughes here is the founding chair of NPOC, and she's showing all the bruises still of that remarkable feat. NPOC NPOC is the very first new constituency in ICANN since its creation. So again, congratulations and thank you. I would turn to Rob in case there are any more questions or interventions from the remote community. There, I am being told there's none. So before we close, a quick look around the table. Is there any interventions or questions from the table? Yes, I see one. Debbie.
I just want to know who else from NPOC is here. Is it just us, or are there others?
You're testing my memory, but besides... No, can I get back to you on that? But there's five of us, and I'll just see you about it after the meeting. Thanks, Debbie. I see Berin has a question.
Yes, I just have a question for our colleague here from the States, whether he can shed some light on helping us be able to get funds from developing partners, since he works with them.
I will do my best. I think it depends a lot on – that's a very broad question, obviously. There are a huge number of different organizations. I'm a former World Bank staffer. I've worked with USAID as well in the donor space. There's obviously resources that are available. There are all kinds of different foundations that I'm sure you're familiar with. It completely depends on how you organize yourself, what you propose, and finding the right audience. And one of the things that's interesting to me about the way that this space is developing is that there exists a strong possibility that people who should be finding each other will be able to find each other much more easily as a result of this. So that's part of my being here as a lurker. We're not an NGO, so I don't propose to join formally, but just to try to understand what's happening. I would certainly be happy to talk with you more offline.
Thank you. That was Andrew Mack, and a very modest presentation. In fact, he's been one of the drivers of the Jazz Working Group and initiative by ICANN to subsidize worthy applicants on the GTLD program. We haven't had the onrush that we expected, but we still have, three applicants. In fact, Andrew has because of his World Bank background and other background, has a good understanding of the internationalization of fundraising, and keep him on your contact list. Debbie.
Yeah, and I think to follow up to that, I think that's certainly one of the things that we were hoping to do with NPOC, to be a resource to each other, in addition to just what's going on here at ICANN and in internet governance, but also finding ways to cross the table, right, and to share best practices. And that was one of the things that I had always thought when we talked about what the mission and reach of a constituency like this would be, one of the benefits would be that we would be able to casually chat or, in a more formal way, share best practices. And so I would encourage the leadership to find maybe some sessions that maybe we could allow that kind of exchange in the future.
Thank you very much, Debbie. Excellent advice. And I want to pass on the floor to Rob Hogarth from ICANN.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final comment from the remote participants. Klaus says, congratulations on a great event from the remote participants.
Well, thank you very much, Klaus. The only regret I would say is that the timing by necessity of our meeting has put our very active Central American and South American participants in NPOC. They are the more numerous group. In fact, should be sleeping right now, and have told us that they weren't getting up to get this. So I'm glad we missed the video of this for technical reasons, but we have the audio and the script, so we will use that information to upload where needed. I'm taking this opportunity to make an announcement. Is that in financial year 2013, one of our workshops will be on a deeper digging into fundraising for NGOs in the developing countries. I don't have a venue yet. There's a few choices, but keep an eye on our website. And I also want to announce that our website will be modernized. It's a very basic website now, but we will be moving to some Web 2.0 technology to make it interactive. And look for some improvements in our communications. And I'm looking around the room. Do I see any other interventions?
I just want to just congratulate you, Alan, and Klaus, and the new board. You all have done a phenomenal job in such a short time, and I'm just humbled to see the work that's being done. And so thank you for your hard work and pressing forward, and I know there's going to be great things to come.
Thank you very much. Yes, this is my chance to really tell you that You know, the multi-stakeholders process is pretty critical to the quality and of the work that ICANN does, and it's one of the rare organizations that I know of that actually walks the talk on this. And the important issue of this is that right now civil society participation at ICANN is not as developed, is not as mature as the participation from governments. Every government around the world sends a representative to the GAC, and as you know, governments always seem to find the funding to do this. They sometimes forget to consult their taxpayers, but there's no worry about government participation at ICANN, nor about the private sector, although I can imagine that there could be a widening of the private sector interest in origins. But what concerns us at NPOC is that we need to increase the voice of civil society globally, and we also need to do it in emerging and developing countries where, in fact, internet policy is critical, more than strategic. It's critical. It can save lives. It can create economic activity, and so it is a mission to which NPOC would like to contribute. So thank you, Debbie, for the congratulations. But that's fine. Your footsteps were easy to follow, and. We got a lot of support and a little bit of luck, too. So on these, I see another Baron, please.
Yes, I'm just curious when we should expect the NPOC to share their activities for the year with us, online perhaps?
Good question. I think that the program, the detailed program, will probably be published in early September. So if there's no other questions, I am closing this session and thanking everyone for participation. Have a good day. Bye.